I have no financial relationships. I have no financial backing with the market the way it is at the moment, anyway, so no problem. What I'd like to do today is just share with you, I was going to do two policy issues, but because of time, I'll reduce it to one. But if people are interested in the second one, which I'll rush past, if you see it and you go, whoops, we want to know about that, I will fill you in later. I represent the Canadian Public Health Association, and our tagline here is the authoritative non-governmental voice for public health in Canada since 1910. We are a pain in the side to the authorities, but that's what we're there for. We're there to advocate, and that's what we do, and that's what my job is. As I said before, my wife was very upset with this particular slide. She said, we have had a relationship for 31 years. Some days, I feel my policy advocacy does feel like this. It really does. I mean, there are days, you know. It really is. I love this slide. And then, as I said to my CEO, some days I need a lot of this, and I asked her to put one of these machines in the CPHA kitchen that I could put my dollar in and sort of get patted on. And this is what I love, when the days go like this, and you've got green lights all the way, and this is when policy is fun. So I was going to talk about two things, and one of them was the stop sign with the signs, no direction to turn, but what I'm going to do is talk to you about the one that I had the three green lights on. But first of all, I just wanted to give you a brief overview of what we're focusing on policy issues at the Canadian Public Health Association. And these bifoci were brought to us by our membership and also by our consultation with the wide Canadian public health community, including the provincial and territorial public health associations, which are independent from us. And they came up with the five priority areas, as you see: health equity, poverty, and the social determinants of health, and public health leadership, public health infrastructure, including the human resources, chronic disease prevention, and environmental health. And this doesn't mean that we're not going to focus on other areas which were brought to our attention, but given our resources and our capacity, you are looking at the policy department at CPHA. So this is what we're going to concentrate on. And I have to say, I'm backed up by a wonderful membership, and actually even people who are not members of CPHA who volunteer their time as advisors to our association, and they are incredible. And if I put a dollar value on that in-kind contribution, it would be worth several hundreds of thousands of dollars. So I really do appreciate it. Just to give you our history, we were 100 years old in 2010, and so now we've had 101 years advocating for healthy public policy and practice, and I had the opportunity during our centennial year to actually get out of the vault the original handwritten minutes from the board meetings of 1910, and it was so exciting to see what they were working on. And you know what? It's the same issues as working on today. It has not changed, ladies and gentlemen. Although infectious diseases were really the focus in the early days, they were talking about the social determinants of health, but they didn't talk about that. They didn't use that language. So it was quite exciting to actually go back and see this. We've been 50 years advocating on tobacco control and tobacco use, and we're bringing out a new updated paper on tobacco use in Canada with an endgame strategy for the Government of Canada, which we hope they will take into consideration, tobacco-free Canada by the year 2035. And we've had 30 years of advocating for health equity and the social determinants of health. We just had an independent review of all of the work we've done on our work on health equity and SDH. It was published in the Canadian Journal of Public Health last year, and it gave us an A+, which I was very happy about. So we're sort of launching from that. The 1990s, a big focus on health systems reform. It was a period of massive restructuring of health systems in Canada, and also huge budget cutbacks. So we were trying to save our universal, publicly funded healthcare system, which is a provincial jurisdiction, from being gutted, and we did a lot of work on that. 2003 was a wake-up call in Canada, of course. We had the SARS incident, as we tend to call it, but a lot of good outcomes. The government of Canada, the federal government, created the Public Health Agency of Canada, which is basically our version of CDC, not funded to that level by any means, unfortunately. The position of the Chief Public Health Officer of Canada was created. We had the public health investment to reinforce the public health system response capacity and to strengthen it, and also greater awareness about the importance of investing in public health. That is the invisible part of our health system. Approximately 1-2% of total health funding goes to public health in Canada. Recent studies suggest it might be 5%, but that's really stretching it, and it has gone down recently. 2009, H1N1 pandemic, of course, hit Canada. it really did demonstrate that the investments in our response mechanism for pandemics had paid off. It wasn't perfect, but we did much better than what we had done on the SARS situation. The important role of the Public Health Agency of Canada in working in a coordinated fashion with the provinces and territories around the response mechanism and surveillance. But some of the issues that came out was mixed public health messages from different levels of government to the public and to frontline health practitioners. And this was a big issue, where our chief public health officer might be saying one thing and a provincial person might be saying not the opposite, but sort of mixed messages. And my daughter, who has two small children, I'm a happy grandfather, she was mixed up. She said, "Dad, I really don't know what to do. Do I get the kids immunized? Do I get immunized? I'm getting mixed messages." And so that was a big issue that was brought up. And also the resources for frontline health units and practitioners. They wanted one-page fast-fact clinical sheets, and what they were given were 300-page clinical documents, really easy to read through. And we also came up with a realization based on our testimony to one of the parliamentary committees about the H1N1 response was the high stress and very limited frontline public health surge capacity, that our public health units were put to the test and unfortunately, as in many countries as well, had to either defer or cancel normal public health functions, and these were never caught up, and we've never actually carried out a health impact assessment of this. So we don't know what happened. Kids unvaccinated, pregnant mothers not visited, et cetera, et cetera. What did we do in 2010 in our policy work? We did a very major position paper on chrysotile asbestos, and that was one of the case studies I was going to present to you, but I'm going to skip over it. And this is a really big issue in Canada about the mining and export to countries with no prior informed consent around chrysotile asbestos and the use of the asbestos in other countries with no protective, no protection at all. Doing position papers on tobacco use and alcohol. This is the case study I will talk about, is our intervener status before the Supreme Court of Canada on Insight, which is the only supervised injection drug facility in Canada. We've done an analysis, as I said, of our policy documents and statements around social determinants of health, and that's helping us move forward on this. Our responses to the 2010 federal budget, which was not public health friendly by any means. And we go to a lot of standing committees, parliamentary standing committees, both in the House of Commons and Senate. And I just gave two examples here. One was looking at the root causes of the elevated rates of TB infection in the First Nations and Inuit communities. And another one we went to was on the status of people with disabilities. The impact on cancelling the mandatory long-form census. Our new conservative federal government just took a decree that they were going to cancel this long-form census, which has major implications for our capacity to collect health information in Canada. And we won't be able to look at health impact assessment. Gee whiz. It's like the government doesn't want to know. 2011 and beyond, we're bringing out the two position papers on tobacco and alcohol. And another one, they were just forming a working group on illegal psychoactive substances. We'll have a working paper on that leading to a position. We just endorsed the low-risk cannabis guidelines, and that hit the European and Chinese press, which we were quite impressed with, that doing this, and we're not advocating the use of cannabis, but we're saying, look, there are many people in Canada that use cannabis, but let's use it responsibly and low risk to people's health. The government didn't like this. Too bad. We did it. Appearance before the Supreme Court, which I'll be getting into in a minute. In our country, the federal... health care is a provincial jurisdiction under the Constitution, but the federal government does provide funding to the provinces and territories in support of health and health services. The current 10-year agreement comes to an end in 2014, and so we're now starting our advocacy around what should be in a renewed federal, provincial, and territorial health fund transfer agreement. There was a very small, and when I say small, I mean small, public health component in the current one. We're going to be positioning ourselves for a very strong public health component in a future health agreement and looking at and proposing that it not be called the health agreement, but rather called the health equity agreement. And that's where we come in with the health equity and SDH issue. And then the prevention of non-communicable diseases has been another big issue for us this year. Okay, I won't go into the chrysotile asbestos. We'll skip over that one, sorry. But what I do want to go to is a safe injection drug facility known as Insight. And basically, I'll give you a bit of background. What is Insight? It was founded by a non-governmental organization, nonprofit community group called the PHS Community Services Society. It provides housing and support to hard-to-reach, hard-to-house, and hard-to-treat people in Vancouver's downtown East End. And I don't know how many people have been to Vancouver here. How many think Vancouver's our most beautiful city in the world? Well, in Canada, maybe. A nice city. How many people think Vancouver's a nice city? How many people have seen the downtown east side of Vancouver? Okay. It wasn't nice, was it? No. All right. It's a mean place. And this is really where Insight is reaching out to the people that live, and when I say live, subsist in the downtown east side. It provides a wide range of health and social services that are totally authorized and funded by the British Columbia government. So this is a provincially funded, provincially authorized facility, right? And it houses Canada's only safe injection drug facility. Just to give you a bit of an overview of the population of the downtown east side, injection drug use, the people that were interviewed, that 15 years on average they've been using injection drugs. So this is not people that wake up one morning and decide, I'm going to shoot up today, you know, this sounds cool. You know, these people, some of them were born of drug addict parents and unfortunately then had an addiction issue to start with. 51% inject heroin, 32% inject cocaine. 87% are infected with Hep C and 17% with HIV. 18% of them are Aboriginal peoples. This is huge. I mean, this is quite disproportionate of the general population. 20% are homeless, and the majority live in very poor housing, in flop houses, boarding houses that are of very poor condition. 80% have been incarcerated. 38% are involved in the sex trade. 59% reported a non-fatal overdose sometime over the previous year. And 21% are using methadone in a detox facility, which is in Insight. So the issue that what happened was the federal government provided an exemption for Insight to exist back in 2003, and the Federal Controlled Drug and Substance Act, CDSA, does have a Section 56, which allows the Minister of Health, the Federal Minister of Health, to provide an exemption from prosecution for possession and trafficking of a controlled substance. And she did use this. It was the Liberal government that brought it in and provided an exemption for Insight to exist on a pilot phase so that it could be looked at and the research carried out to actually see whether or not it's effective and cost, both its impact is effective and its cost effective. And it was a 3-year exemption from the CDSA, and it was renewed twice for 1 year, 2 1-year periods. A new government came in power, the Conservative government, and are morally against drugs. And very, it's the war on drugs issue. It's a very Reagan-Bush-like attitude towards it. And they were horrified that this would exist, and they felt it was promoting the use of drugs. And so the current Minister of Health refused to give an exemption. So the government was claiming that people using illegal injection drugs within the confines of a safe injection drug facility are liable to prosecution for possessing a controlled substance. The other issue that was under Section 4.1 of the CDSA, the other issue under Section 5.1 was that inside staff, the nursing and doctors, were liable to prosecution for the trafficking of drugs, and that the users and staff, as I said, the exemption was the users and staff were afforded an exemption from prosecution by the Federal Minister of Health under Section 56 of the CDSA. So the judicial issues that were being brought forth here was that under the federal constitutional power to legislate regarding criminal law cannot interfere with the provincial power about health care. As I said, health care is a provincial jurisdiction. The feds have the jurisdiction around criminal law. So it was inter-jurisdictional immunity and paramountcy, which I love that term, paramountcy. And then the CDSA sections 4.1 and 5.1 were unconstitutional because they deprive people addicted to one or more controlled substances access to health care, and it violates Section 7 of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which provides for security of the person, basically their right to life, liberty, and well-being. And we also felt that there was an unfettered discretion of the Minister of Health, that this unfettered discretion was unconstitutional. there were three jurisdictional interventions here. When the current federal government Minister of Health refused to provide an extension to the exemption under Section 56 of the CDSA, Insight, through PHS Community Services and other groups, brought the federal government to the Supreme Court of British Columbia, arguing that this was a breach of constitutional law, and the British Columbia Supreme Court found for Insight, so basically defeat number one for the federal government. Federal government then appealed this to the Court of Appeal for British Columbia, and in 2010, so it was the Attorney General of Canada against all these people, and the Appeals Court of British Columbia found for Insight, so 2-0. And the federal government wasn't going to give up. They decided to go all the way to the Supreme Court of Canada this year, and so it became the Attorney General of Canada versus PHS Community Services et al. And there were several interveners on the side of Insight, including the Canadian Public Health Association. And I was very privileged to work with the legal team from Toronto. We were contacted by a law firm in Toronto who offered their services to us pro bono, which was just incredible. And I worked with them along with an advisory committee of CPHA volunteer members. And we put together our position, which basically addiction is an illness, not a lifestyle choice. That Insight, based on the research results, we could only use research findings up to the June 2008, which was the date of the Supreme Court of British Columbia hearing. We could not go beyond that. But the research we had in hand, that we showed that Insight reduces risk to overdose and infection and promotes counseling and treatment. Drugs do not cause HIV or Hep C. It's the unsanitary practices, techniques, and facilities that do. A risk morbidity and mortality associated with injection reduced with the presence of a qualified health professional, basically the safe injection drug site, you had a nurse or doctor on hand, and they were not injecting the drugs by any means, but they were overseeing the person that was injecting drugs and then making sure that there was no overdose reaction. And Insight did not increase drug-related loitering, drug dealing, drug-related crime, drug use, nor did it promote drug use acceptable messaging, which were the arguments being put forth by the federal government. What we were arguing was that Section 4.1 of the CDSA was unconstitutional as applied to healthcare services delivered at Insight. It deprives the individuals of their life, liberty, and security interests. That Section 4.1 failed to protect the public from harms associated with drug use. That it was overboard, arbitrarily, and grossly disproportionate and violated Section 7 of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and that it was discouraging the use of safe injection drug services, and it harms both the individual and the community health and safety. Supreme Court decision came out on September the 30th. The court heard the case on May the 12th of this year, and our lawyers told us it would probably be 8 months to a year before the court rendered its decision, and we were phoned on the Monday before this Friday told that the Supreme Court would be bringing out their decision in record time at 9:45, Friday the 30th of September. And I was in a meeting outside of CPHA, and the representative of the Canadian Nurses Society, one of the other interveners in this case, was next to me, and our cell phones both went off at the same time at about 9:46 from our respective offices, telling us that we had won. And not only had we won, it was a unanimous decision, and it was written by the Chief Justice herself, which was a real slap in the face to the federal government. Basically, what they found, and I boiled this very simply, that the delivery of health care services is not immune from federal interference. Fine. So basically, they said that the CDSA is legal, it's not unconstitutional, and that the provinces do not have paramountcy over the federal government. Fine. However, that the CDSA is constitutionally valid and applicable to Insight under the Federal Provincial Division of Powers. However, the application deprives Insight clients of their charter rights, and that's what we argued on. And that this also covers staff, so the staff are safeguarded from being found guilty under CDSA. And the Minister of Health, the court compels her to provide an exemption to Insight. And they also put up several criteria, which we thank them for, in terms of future safe injection sites, what the standards that have to be met for future safe injection sites. And what we are now looking at are how can we use the application of the Charter Section 7 to other harm reduction situations. And one of the issues we're sort of looking at is the whole issue of prostitution and a public health approach to prostitution in Canada. Are we looking at safeguarding the life, liberty, and security of sex trade workers and the community through Section 7? And the other one this morning that I got thinking about from this morning's talk on prison health was, could we be extending Charter Section 7 to the rights of prisoners and looking at that? So I think there's some exciting opportunities here. Anyway, I invite all of you to come to our CPHA 2012 annual conference, which will be in June 11th to the 14th in the beautiful city of Edmonton, Alberta, the most conservative province in Canada. So come and join us, and we'll see you there. So thank you. I think I'm a little bit over time, but thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry, I wanted to leave you with Albert Einstein. I love this quote. "The world we have created is a product of our thinking. It cannot be changed without changing our thinking." So.
Thank you very much for that. And well done. Great presentation, but also what an achievement. It really shows what can be done with enthusiasm and determination, doesn't it? Sometimes. We've got a few...
And a supportive wife.
And presumably the pro bono law firm. They took the risk and yep. Worked for them. Very good. We do have time for a few questions, if people have any. And in starting us off, I just want to just pay tribute to Alex Gatherer, who's sitting there quietly in the front and who actually got this whole discussion together today. So thank you, Alex.